Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Joe Prano Podcast. I am super stoked about today's episode because I've got surf journalist Chaz Smith sitting down with me. He is the author of the fantastic new book, Cocaine and Surfing, which we talk about at length in this episode, as well as all kinds of things surfing and surfy and the surf industry and tons of other things that would get me dinged on the now defunct Kooks of Comedy podcast, which I used to host. And speaking of the Kooks of Comedy, Chaz is maybe one of my favorite guests in the history of that show. And he is, without a doubt, the most listened to guest in the history of the Kooks of Comedy podcast. He came on that show to talk about his first book, Welcome to Paradise, Now Go to Hell, which is about life on the North Shore of Hawaii. So if you enjoy today's episode of my show, if you enjoy Chaz, go back and find his episode of the Kooks and hear him talk all about Welcome to Paradise, Now Go to Hell. If you love today's episode, make sure that you pick up not only Cocaine and Surfing, which you're about to hear all about, but Welcome to Paradise, Now Go to Hell, and follow Chaz on all the things social media, and certainly subscribe to him on Beach Grit, which is the surf ding website that he writes regularly for. Also, if you love this show, please take a moment, rate, review, and subscribe to this show on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Google Play, whatever your podcast listening app of choice is. I can't tell you how important that is, especially for a new show, especially on iTunes, for you guys to take the time to rate and review the show. It's a huge help when a show is brand new. It helps us to get into new and noteworthy. It just helps to get the ball rolling and helps us chart. I don't know why I keep saying us. Me. Helps me and this show chart on iTunes. So if you haven't done that yet, pause the podcast right now and go do it. Thank you. Welcome back. Thank you for rating and reviewing and subscribing to this show. That was awesome of you. I can't believe you hit pause when I asked you to hit pause, and then you did that. That is super cool. I did start a Patreon page for this show. It's patreon.com/Joe Prano. You can go there and you can donate any amount, any small amount on a monthly basis to the show. As I said in the teaser episode for this, probably the biggest percentage of the money that I get from patrons will be going to travel to talk to a bunch of guests that are on my list of people that I want to sit down with, but are scattered around the country and the world. So I started a Patreon page, already got a bunch of people that have signed up as patrons, and a big thank you to all those guys. If you want to see the show continue to grow, please do that. And if you can't, totally understandable, but at least go check out the Patreon page, watch a video I put up, and if you got no money to give, then and you didn't pause and rate and review and subscribe, go do that now. For you surfy surf folks, I will be down in La Jolla at the Comedy Store in La Jolla July 27th through the 29th with fellow surfing comedians Eddie Ift, who's headlining. Eddie always puts on a great show, and we'll have Tom Allen from Chad Goes Deep fame hosting the whole weekend. So it'll be Chad/Tom, myself, and Eddie in a surf bonanza of a weekend down in San Diego. So come check that out. Again, that's July 27th through 29th. And if you're not down in San Diego, just go to joeprano.com. for all my shows, see if I'm coming to a town near you. You can also support the show on joeprano.com by picking up some merch, pick up some Joe Prano 2020 stickers, some t-shirts, whatever. Any of this stuff is just going right back into this Joe Prano podcast because I really do want to see it grow. And I've already gotten so much great feedback from you guys that I'm just stoked to keep delivering you guys interviews and content and maybe even a solo episode soon. So, in honor of having Chaz Smith once making an appearance on the Cusip Comedy Podcast, we'll throw a little homage to that show, and we'll say, cue Doug Ray.
Hey, Joe, I like your show. I tell everybody that's my shit. And if you got a long ride and you like getting high, maybe go and take another hit. We gonna laugh out loud, that's what it's about. Nobody ain't safe no more. And Joe stands out even in a big crowd, cause the motherfucker's 6'4". Hey, Joe, it's time to start the show. Up, up, and away we go. Mic check, and I like your flow. Everybody, here's Joe.
Very excited for this next episode. I'm sitting here with my favorite surf journalist and the author of the new book, Cocaine and Surfing, Mr. Chaz Smith.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
We had you on the Cusip Comedy Podcast.
I loved it.
A few years ago.
One of my favorite experiences in the podcast world. I think it was actually my first experience in the podcast world, to be honest.
Oh, great. Yeah. I'm sure you've done a few with this book being out now. Everybody's got a podcast.
I've done some now, yeah, but that was the first one. And so...
I'm sorry that we don't have vitamin water and Tito's for you today.
It's okay. In this book, I switch over to grape-flavored coconut water and vodka. So,
I haven't even seen grape-flavored. Only you get that. You're ahead of the curve.
It was in the supermarket in Cardiff by the Sea, and I thought, because I had been doing it with grape juice, like just mixing it with the kids' extra grape juice, I thought it's good, but it's a little too sweet. And then I saw the grape-flavored coconut water, and thought this is just perfection. And it was. It is the perfect cocktail.
That's awesome.
You hydrate and dehydrate.
Yeah, exactly. You kind of balance each other out.
Totally.
So last time when we had you on Kooks, we were talking about your first book, which was your North Shore book. God, I always fuck up the title whenever I do it.
But Welcome to Paradise, Now Go to Hell.
Welcome to Paradise, Now Go to Hell. And this book, Cocaine and Surfing, just came out. And what made you say, I got to do, because you had teased it the last time when you were on. You were like, I'm working on another thing. You're like, I don't want to talk about it too much. And then you kind of hinted, you're like, cocaine and surfing. And then now that's the actual title of the book.
See, so Welcome to Paradise came out, and I thought, great, this is my final surf book. The world does not need another surf book, right? Like, I have nothing else to say, I thought at the time, and probably was right then. But I thought, no more surf. I'm going to do other real stuff. And I had the kind of joke idea of cocaine and surfing in my head, but it was a pure joke. And so I, went out and thought about a bunch of stuff and kind of tried to do other things, and nothing worked. And so it was just all kind of hitting a wall. And so I pitched totally randomly as more or less a joke, cocaine and surfing, to my agent. And she said, this is good. And then she went out and sold it. And I wasn't expecting it. Like, so she went out and sold in Australia first. And then sold it to Audible, and I didn't even believe it. Still, I was like, I'm not writing this book. It's like a dumb idea. It's a bad concept. I don't even know how to write that book. And then when she sold it in the U.S., I think I had 6 weeks at that point to deadline.
Wow.
And so I was like, So I gotta go write.
So you got some cocaine. First things first.
I got cocaine, and then wrote a. I can't write on cocaine. Have you ever tried to do anything on cocaine?
I've tried to do a lot of things on cocaine, but none of them successfully.
It doesn't work. It's like the worst. I mean, I think the only thing it's good for is standing around bathrooms and solving the world's problems.
Right.
Other than that.
Great for conceptualizing screenplays, bad for writing.
For sitting down. Like, have you sat down in front of your computer?
I'm a big Hunter S. Thompson fan.
Sure.
And I know you've often been compared to Hunter S. Thompson, sort of the Hunter S. Thompson of the surf world. And he said at one point, the best way is take all your notes, paint the windows black of a hotel room, do a bunch of cocaine, and be done. I was like, I think that's only the blueprint for you, man.
He is a wild man on that. I tried once. It's in the book. I honestly found an 8-ball of coke on the street and thought, this is perfect. This is just the ordained thing that's supposed to happen. Did a bump or a few bumps and sat in front of my computer staring at just the cursor blinking. And that was it. Like, it just... all seized, just clenching my jaw, seized
just
up.
Just the idea of cocaine and writing, it's like, the first thing I want to do is get up and move around.
And that's
like,
it. Sitting there in front of your computer, so I did. I went surfing and then got a migraine headache, and that was it. That was my cocaine. So Hunter Thompson has a much better constitution than me for things like this.
When you pitch it as cocaine and surfing, it sounds like an idea,
yeah,
right? And but now it's actually the title of the book. Was that the plan all along?
I only ever wanted my title was Cocaine and Surfing, a love story, where a love story would be the subtitle. So the publisher smartly changed it to whatever it is now, a sordid history of surfing's greatest love affair.
Yeah.
But and then at some point in, like, as it was moving, I think my agent asked the publisher, so, you know, what are you thinking title wise? And they were like, oh, we like Cocaine and Surfing. And I thought of it just as this completely absurd book, because it's what it is. I mean, it's all true. But to me, surfing is just this absurd thing. And cocaine plus surfing as a title of a book is equally absurd. So it just all worked.
It's funny because we've all heard the phrase a million times, don't judge a book by its cover.
Yep.
This book can absolutely be judged by its cover.
That's all there is.
Cocaine and surfing. You've got waves that look like lines. Your name on it. That's it. It's exactly what the cover is selling you.
It's my favorite thing to talk about. I always struggled with Welcome to Paradise when people would ask me what it's about. You know, and it's about the North Shore. It was kind of this outsider's perspective. You know, this one, when they say what's Cocaine and Surfing about, I just have to say yes, and that's it.
Was there any pushback? Because I just bought it. I told you before we started, I'm not done yet because I just got it and I was on the road. And I was trying to read it, like, as I was traveling and performing. So, of course, I'm in airports reading this book.
Yeah.
And I'm just holding up Cocaine and Surfing. I was just in Wenatchee, Washington Airport. And people are looking at me like, dude, you can't even be talking about either of those things here. Like,
I got a good text from, or Instagram message from some kid who he got the package in the mail and had his mom open it. And mom sends him a screenshot or a picture of the book. And it was just like, what is this? And so that made me happy that it's getting mom riled up.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing because my girlfriend and I, of course, as you do these days, we share an Amazon Prime account.
Yeah.
And I was like, can you just put this through your thing? And she's like, oh, my mom's going to see Cocaine and Surfing. I was just buy the book, you know what I mean?
I think I honestly got my Instagram account shut down by Insta. And I think at first I thought it was the World Surf League behind it, just being dirty and nefarious. But now I wonder is if I had so many cocaine references that they thought this guy is just basically a drug mule,
right?
And he's just, and they draw, I got no warning, I got nothing. Just one day I went to look and laugh at stuff and it said, your account has been disabled. And that was it.
I just saw that because I saw on Twitter you posted, like, I'm coming back to Twitter.
Yeah.
Is it fun again?
Yeah.
And I was excited about that because I think, I mean, you're a writer. So it's almost like Twitter is the place for you.
That's the thing. I think Instagram was easier just because I could take a break from a second and not think in words and think in pictures.
Yeah.
And I feel everybody is so good on Twitter, right? Like everybody's so, the quality of
pity. Oh, you haven't been on Twitter in a while.
I literally hadn't. I hadn't been on Twitter for a good 10 years. But I felt like, I guess the stuff I saw in the media always felt pithy and funny and direct. And I was like, I can't compete. I can't compete with that. I'm a fucking surf journalist.
Yeah.
Like, it's not good. I have nothing to offer. So, but then I just decided to write my third surf book on Twitter.
I saw that.
Yeah.
It's already started. And as a guy who lives in Venice,
yeah.
I mean, Abbot Kinney is a major player in the first chapter or whatever. And I think this is a great idea. I told you when you did Kooks, the first thing that sort of led me to you was you doing Jamie O'Brien's Twitter, which is, those are really the glory days of Twitter.
And that was the last time I was on Twitter. I mean, honestly, engaging with Twitter. And that's the funny thing is I can't even remember really what I was doing there. I remember just saying absurd things.
Yeah.
But now I feel like you can't just say absurd things and get an audience because it seems like, especially in the day and age of Trump, there's so much absurdity happening on Twitter that how do you cut through the absurd with more absurd, right?
Yeah.
And so I sat for a minute after I got kicked off Insta thinking, damn it, okay, I am going back to Twitter, but like, how do you get back in? Like,
right.
it seemed daunting.
Well, it's funny because as a comedian, Twitter is like such a big part of our, you know, kind of social media presence. It's like, you gotta put up jokes. You gotta put up your kind of hot takes on things, especially having a sports podcast. I've got to tweet about my love of LeBron James all the time. And, it certainly went through like a shitty period where it's everybody retweeting Trump and making their shitty joke about his hair and whatever. But sort of like I said, the glory days, the who is JOB days.
Those are fun
days. I'm putting it on you. You're bringing Twitter back.
I got to figure it out.
I'm putting the pressure on you.
Okay, I started my surf novel, but then my next one on Twitter, but then I realized that it's impossible to follow because, of course, the way that Twitter, and it's not even chronological anymore.
Yeah.
So people would have to go into somebody's profile, I guess, right?
Right.
In order to read it, which doesn't make sense.
Well, you posed a great question, and
yeah.
I was going to give you the answer today. You said, do I go in reverse order? Do
yeah.
I go on whatever? Now, if you reply to your own tweet, like if you reply to the first one, eventually it'll say, show this thread. And you could open the thread and see the whole thread in order.
Okay, I'm starting again and doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's brilliant.
And then just give us the chunks and then, I mean, it's incredible. Like, open this thread for a novel.
Oh, that is fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I'm doing. Because I was wondering, like, because I have
together we're going to make Twitter great again.
I mean, this feels really, really good. Yeah, because, like, my Facebook kicks through my Instagram, too. So if I put something on Facebook, then it's, and I forgot that, right? And so I was in the middle of my story, and then I had some stupid Facebook post kicking to
right.
I was like, oh, that doesn't belong in there.
Yeah.
The whole story's wrecked. So yeah, it really made me sit and get frustrated.
So yeah, get your thread going.
Reply.
And you're on Twitter. What's your name on Twitter? Are you at Trash Pros?
It's at Trash Pros on Twitter. Yep.
And I also saw you put on Instagram or on Twitter that you thought that you might have been removed from Instagram for penis ping pong.
I don't think it was penis ping pong because I never even got flagged on penis ping pong. Oddly.
So, people are like, what the fuck are they talking about?
But yeah, unless people were, I mean, there's an amazing video out there and
yeah.
I found out he's a professional ping pong player who just takes his pants off one day and hits the ping pong ball with his penis and hits it so perfectly. Like he winds up, it's in slow motion. It's a beautiful video, really. It's like,
it reminded me, you know, it reminded me of the video of Bruce Lee playing ping pong with
the
nunchucks.
With the nunchucks.
I was
exactly.
like, this can't be real.
That's exactly what it is, right?
Yeah.
And his shot on the ball is so clean. I even feel there's like topspin on the ball and stuff. Like it's an epic shot. It's not just this accidental shot where the ball goes
yeah.
flying off or whatever. He like beautifully hits the ping pong ball with his penis. And I posted that a bunch of times. Last time I posted that was probably a couple months ago. And, you know, I guess somebody could have screenshot it and say there's pornography on Instagram.
Right.
But I feel there's way worse stuff on Instagram than
yeah.
that.
I mean, honestly, most pictures of food should
yeah.
be flagged before before that.
Exactly.
I started reading your book. And one thing that I wanted to ask you about was you, obviously you write for Beach Grit.
I do.
And you make mention of that you just text your articles. Is that true? Will you just write a long text and send it to Derek and that goes up?
I will. Yeah. Derek Riley is my partner. He's out in Australia. And sometimes, you know, if I don't have access to internet or whatever, I'm not with my or on my computer and I get an idea, I'll just text Derek the entire story. And I mean, you know, my stories are usually like, I don't know, 200 words max.
Yeah.
So it's not that hard to text.
It's just like a nice long text.
Totally.
And
that's
then
it.
He puts it up on the site.
That's it.
I mean, that's
that.
The definition of new media.
I feel that it is. I feel always really good when I'm doing it. I feel like this is pioneering right now, except for all the like bulky parts that it's going through. The fact that I'm texting it to Derek and he's
right.
having to format it. Like if I was texting it straight to the website, then it would be the future, I think.
Yeah.
It'd be future media.
Now when I started reading the book, you know, you talked about, you sort of had this idea and it does seem that when you're reading it, like you are getting, it's almost like you're saying, I had this idea and I kind of am interested in doing it, but I don't know if it's a real thing. And then just signs keep leading you like, I have to do this.
Totally. Like, and it really, this book, Welcome to Paradise was honest too, but this one is oddly. Because, you know, when you write a book, it gets published like a year after you write it, right? And so I finished writing this book, I think exactly, basically, I can't really, but I think my deadline was April last year, right? And so I finished writing it substantially like over a year ago. But even if I read a chunk now, like I totally forgot about it in the year between. Like I honestly couldn't remember. My wife read it in bed when we got the first copy. And she was sitting there chuckling along and I would keep having to ask her what she was laughing about. She would tell me and I would have barely any idea of what the thing was. So I've had to kind of go in and reread it again, but it even made me laugh at some points, like where I thought, okay, this is a genuine, like honest reflection of surfing today, I think. So
my favorite part, and again, I'm only about 150 pages in, is your, like, It almost seems like as a reporter's work, all you have to do is go like, so you like cocaine?
Yeah.
You do cocaine? How much cocaine do you do? Like,
What other question is there to ask?
Yeah,
that's the stupid. I mean,
you're just in the surf world and then you're asking people
if they like cocaine.
If they like cocaine.
And that's it. I mean, and that's all That's all there was. That's when I was getting stuck. I mean, really, honestly, when I was like, I honestly have a midlife crisis while I'm writing the book that's ongoing now. But as I'm like fighting through it and thinking, why the hell am I doing this book? Like there's thinking, I mean, I'll spoil the book at the end, I guess, is I thought that cocaine was really interesting as a thing, as an idea before starting. And it was just the hardest thing to write ever. And then I asked Derek Riley, business partner in Australia, like, why am I having, I was like 3/4 of the way through, I think. And usually when I write, I can write on a text. Like I'll just do it pretty quickly. This one, every day I would just slam my head against the wall and could not do it. And he said, all cocaine does is turn men into boars. And I was like, oh, it's totally true that cocaine makes people boring. And so I'm writing a book about flawed characters who are just getting more boring by the thing they're doing and then trying to make it more interesting, which is just, I felt this is
it's funny awful. Because you've been sort of outspoken and I'm sure not a friend to that many people in the surf world because you're like, surfing is boring.
Yeah.
So you're taking boring and you're adding more boring.
Doubling down on boring. That's exactly what it is. And I think this, it was a pain in the ass to write, but at the end, I think it's at least honest.
Now, between the stuff that you've done in magazines, you know, the Twitter history, just your sort of surf journalism career, and then, of course, the North Shore book, how is it when you're walking around and you're trying to, like, prod people in the surf world and your kind of opening statement is, hey, you like cocaine? Like, what's the reaction that you're getting from people? How is it different from the reaction that you've gotten in the past from working on other things?
I mean, at this point, people know already what my shtick is kind of in surf. And so I'll just get the real like, oh no, why are you asking me this? Like the scrunched up, annoyed face. And then either that or people will be too drunk or coked and they'll be hyped to talk about it. And those are always the good ones, right? Like at a party. But like there's people that oddly, when it came out, I can't remember. I must have written something about writing it. It's very meta. But a lot of people would reach out and say, oh, I have stories that you need in the book, right? So that felt good, actually. Like, having to go chase stuff down, but also having people come to me and say, this is something you need in this book.
Yeah, people are coming to you with it.
Which is better.
The one good thing about cocaine, people always want to talk if they're on it, right?
I mean, that's the exact thing is, people will not shut up if they're on it. So
one moment in the book that I loved already was, and I've kind of talked about this, and same thing goes with stand-up comedy, you're always chasing the rush of that first time in surfing and in cocaine.
Like, exactly.
I think the detriment, I mean, besides obviously, you know, it's a drug and very easily addict to, is like that first time you do cocaine, you're like, holy shit. And immediately from that moment, you go, I just need more cocaine.
That's it.
And you never again feel the first rip, the first rush, the first whatever.
Nobody ever, I don't think, wakes up after a coke bender and thinks that was a good idea. Like, I think you can, you can drink a shit ton and wake up in the morning and think, oh, that was, I don't feel good, but at least that was fun or whatever. I think with any other drug, I don't know about any other drug, right, wake up on heroin, pretty disappointed with yourself. But cocaine, I think everybody just wakes up hating themselves, right? Because you have that initial hit, and then all you're ever doing is chasing it for the rest of the night, or I guess the rest of your life.
Which
there's a Keith Richards quote in the book, but that I found interesting, which was like he talks about how he didn't have a problem with cocaine, and it was purely because he recognized that you don't ever get higher. Like, so basically your first bump is as good as it's gonna get, and you might as well stop from there.
What's amazing is, and you lay it out very clearly, and anybody that's kind of been around the surf industry and pro surfers or even wannabe pro surfers, is there is this relationship. Like cocaine and surfing, they do go hand in hand. It is a love story. But they also are, like, cocaine is completely against the idea. Like, surfing is all about getting up early and, being – and. Cocaine is like, I'm going to ruin your chances of getting up early and happy and not needing to take a shit. And
that is the most wild thing about surfing, though, I think, or surfers, is that they will – I've seen, so many surfers go huge the night before. Like, I mean, massive on just coked out, drunk, up at 5:30 a.m. ready to surf. And I always wonder, how in the world are they doing that? Which – I almost wonder if that's what separates the pro surfer from the non-pro, is the pro surfer is the guy who can muscle through a coke hangover and go surf.
And it almost seems like these days the difference. You'll watch the guys who are really making noise on the tour, and you're like, oh, they're the guys that like don't party that
yeah,
hard.
Yeah, kind of.
It's
totally.
Almost like, oh, I see what the dividing line is.
I think what you'll see also, if you're paying attention, is guys like fall off really quickly, like have a run and then, you know, kind of disappear. The fitness part about surfing, like, you know, I don't know what Kelly Slater's personal history is, but I think it's pretty clear from just looking at his arc that, you know, right. he doesn't abuse drugs regularly.
At least not anymore, hopefully. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like the Baywatch days. Yeah, you gotta wonder when you're on the Baywatch set.
I mean,
with
Hoff and Pam, it's gotta be tempting.
Now, how much cocaine goes into you? Just, I know you said doesn't factor in at all to actually putting it down on paper and getting a book done.
Yeah.
But how much cocaine for you personally goes into researching this
I
book?
Mean, I had to, I think if I had never done coke, then how could I write a book about cocaine, right?
Yeah.
And so it was, to be honest, I hate cocaine. And so, like, I don't like, I guess everybody likes that, or maybe not everybody, but I like that first, you like that first hit, right? But
right.
I hate that chasing. Like,
totally.
And you just, you become like this odd creature that's chasing this thing. And so I honestly don't like cocaine, but I've definitely done enough cocaine to know, you know, just to touch the major tenets of, okay, this is what a night on cocaine feels like.
Right.
Which I think beyond that, I mean, funny, I had started writing this book. I thought, okay, I'm going to write the entire book from the perspective of somebody on coke. Like, I'm going to write it in coke language, right? Where, so it was...
No periods whatsoever.
It was not...
Lots of ellipses.
Exactly. There was no periods. I honestly wrote 2 or 3 chapters just like in coke mind, right? Like, I wasn't doing coke, but just writing like coke people talk. And I sent it to my buddy and I said, okay, this is what I'm thinking about doing, telling the entire history of surfing, just coke addled. And he said back right away, nobody wants that. Nobody ever wants to hear a yeah. coked out person jabbering in their ear. And it was totally true. Like, I thought, oh, I've stumbled on a genius way to tell this story, and then had to totally throw everything away and start again.
Yeah,
it's
you're
an awful way.
It's sort of catering to just the coked up reader, which yeah. not big readers.
Precisely, precisely. It would only work with the guy who just did a bunch of blow and picked up a book to read.
I think you should do like an audio version of it.
I did, which is all, it's just like the jabber nonstop. Yeah.
Just do one for the regular listener and one for the listener who's on cocaine in their car.
That's a really good idea.
You know, like you said, first of all, cocaine, anybody who does cocaine, it's always like, we always set our own sort of personal rules with it.
Sure.
Like, my thing is like, I've never bought cocaine.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'll
sure.
do it if somebody's got it.
Yeah.
And then when it runs out for the night, I'm like, okay, we don't need any more, guys.
Yeah.
Like, we had our fun.
Yep.
And of course, there's always the guys like, more cocaine,
yeah.
more cocaine. How much did you have to like be around it or use it in actual like... you're sort of like a narc in that situation. You're like, you're walking around surf parties asking people about cocaine.
Completely.
Is it like, yeah, let's go to the bathroom, I'll show you how much I do cocaine?
No, because people, I think, really, when I'm out at a party, people are, you know, I think they have enough kind of sense about that. Like, and the other thing about cocaine too, I think, is I didn't have to fall into giant cocaine vendors all night to get it, because people never want to share their, if they don't have to share their cocaine,
right.
they're happy not to share their cocaine. And for me to be kind of observant in any way, like, you know, I didn't want to be all coked out while I was out doing that kind of stuff. So yeah, thankfully I didn't have to do too much of that. I did a little, but I mean, a little of being out at
right.
a surf party, you know, coked up, but yeah, not a ton, which is, I hate it. I'm so thankful I didn't have to do more.
You already talked about how people sort of knew you were writing this book, and then you've always been pretty entrenched in the surf world. You know, you're at surf contests, you're at surf parties, you're at all the premieres, all that stuff, just kind of doing your thing. Was there an even more than normal idea of like, oh, Chaz is going to name my name in this, drug tale?
I think, thankfully, that Welcome to Paradise kind of worked in my favor, that I think people didn't feel they got burned in there. I mean, maybe some people felt they got burned, but I never heard from anybody who felt burned. So I think that people thought, okay, if, like, he'll be he's not just going to go bury me because he can. I mean, that's the thing. I think there's something to the ethics of writing in general, but knowing that you control how the story looks, right? So somebody could totally do a bunch of blow in front of you and piss themselves and make an ass out of themselves, right? And it's sure, you can write that story and make them look like a total dick, but also, I mean, I don't know, there's, I always take pretty seriously, okay, I know that I'm crafting a narrative here. I don't care about making myself the bad guy, which is why I'll stick my damn stupid self in the story, because it's easy for me to make myself a bad guy or unlikable. I don't like making somebody else unlikable unless they're legitimately unlikable, which is, I think it's pretty rare for people, for a person to be straight up unlikable. And there's plenty in Surf, right? And
yeah.
And maybe if I ever write another Surf book, my third one will be all the people I hate in Surf, and I'll just go down and it'll just be like Nixon's
you
black
book. Well, since you're doing it on Twitter, you can just at them all.
Totally.
And they can see it as it happens. They'll get a notification.
Totally. Just add, yeah, that's what I should do, is that these are the people in Surfing that I hate. But this, I mean, funny thing is, I've thought I've hated people in Surf before, right? And so, okay, this person is absolutely worthless. Completely teed off on them, and then discover later, oh wait, they were a genuinely nice person. So yeah I feel bad sometimes, but there's enough people. I think I got a good 10 right now that I could melt and not feel one iota of remorse.
It's funny because when you talk about it, like the Surf, it almost goes back to the same thing. It's like when I'm hanging out at a party, especially, you know, being in sort of comedy and being in the entertainment business, you're hanging out at a party, bunch of people doing drugs. You're like, that guy's a fucking asshole.
Yeah.
And then the next day or next time you see him, it's not that same thing. You're like, you know what? He's actually
cool.
Not that bad
a
guy. It's like,
totally.
I'm totally judging. But it seems like that is the Surf world in a nutshell. It's like everybody has to have this, I'm the coolest guy, bravado, and the Surf fans sort of idolize these people. They want their board shorts, they want their, you know, flip flops and all that shit. But then you take a closer look and you're like, everybody's kind of a fucking kook.
Yeah, I thought that was a great part about Kook's comedy, right? It's just the kind of, which I think you guys beat, like Kook of the Day, even on Instagram and stuff like that. But this celebration of, and not in a kooky way, but just this, everybody's a kook, right?
Yeah.
Where no, even the most core surfer on earth is going to do something kooky at some point. Like, and being able to celebrate it, I think is, you know, I don't know how many core surfers ever celebrate their kookiness, but I think it's more and more like people recognizing, okay, you know, yeah, sure, that guy has a wetsuit on backwards, but
yeah,
you know, one time I ...
And we always talked about it where there's this kook scale, right? And everybody's on it somewhere.
Yeah.
And from like the far end is the guy whose fins down on the car that you've talked about in the book a few times. And then at the other end, you know, like, okay, let's say Kelly Slater is this ultimate, but he's still
a kook.
He's still a kook.
Yep.
You know, he's still out there selling wave parks now and selling energy drinks and
perps. I just saw him selling now organic Michelob Ultra.
Really?
Apparently they have an organic grain Michelob Ultra that Kelly Slater is the spokesperson for.
We're going to have to mix that with the perps and we're going to have to start this surf cocktail page.
Michelob Ultra and perps might be similar to vodka and great flavored coconut water.
So when you're you're down in, are you down in Cardiff now?
Cardiff by the sea.
So you're like, that's the epicenter, down there.
It's an epicenter, yeah.
Yeah, of you know, the North County, San Diego. What, like, what's your day-to-day interaction with the surf world? Are you sort of, is that like, you've got kids, you got a wife, you're a surf journalist, but like, are you sort of feeding off that every day?
No. Oddly, like, you know, I'll go down to the local market and stuff, and Rob Machado lives not too far away. So I'll see like Rob Machado all the time. And, you know, I like laughing with him. I like laughing with people that I see, but, you know, and then if there's a contest or a premiere or something like that I feel like, okay, I need to be there for whatever reason for work, then I'll go. And that's the funny thing. It is such a family. And even if people hate me, or if I'm the, you know, bastard, whatever, outside guy that nobody wants to deal with, since it is such a family, I've just wedged my damn self so deep in there that it's just, you know, I have friends, and I think people will kind of semi-laugh at what I do. I can't even remember, honestly. I think the last time somebody came up and yelled at me for something I wrote, or even spoke curtly to me for something I wrote, was 20 years ago. Like, people just, and I don't know, I think I've had a habit before of directly writing. If somebody comes up and yells at me for something, then going and writing it and posting it real quick.
And so people are just, even if they want to do it, they're sort of afraid to do it.
Yeah, they know that, okay, I'm going to give them a damn story. So
it's no secret, and you talk about it in the book, but the surf industry is sort of reeling because something that's been happening for a long time for us surf fans is it's really hard to capture the surf world, especially just down to the elementary, like capturing a surf contest in a way that's digestible. So there's this trouble with the growing of the industry where it's like it's reached the ceiling and there's certainly a way to go on and grow it, but no one's been able to figure it out. And obviously Kelly's got the wave pool now, and that's now going to be on the tour. And yep. So it's easy to say, hey, we can cover this. This is when it's going to happen, and this was going to. But that also has an element of uncool to it.
Totally.
What about being sort of in the surf industry, and this is something you have to cover? How do you feel about like going, oh man, I'm kind of like in this world that it might have peaked already, and we were already going, oh, there's some place to go from here. But it seems like 5 years ago, it was like maybe that was the peak.
I think 10 years ago. I mean, that's the crazy thing is I feel like when the economy first tanked in the U.S., like, you know, whenever it was, 20 years ago, right? Like that first recession where everybody in surf, the surf industry could kind of blame, okay, you know, our fortunes are not what they were because the global economy is melting down, right? Well, the global economy has been coming back, or is it, you know, whatever it is, like an 11-year sustained growth period. The surf industry is still just circling the drain and, just a nosedive, which I touch on it in the book. It's interesting to me, and it feels to me more or less that surfing's just lost its way entirely, right? Where you had these big surf companies, Quiksilver, Billabongs, whatever, that became publicly traded. And so now they're answering to shareholders instead of the person actually wearing the thing.
Right.
And then you have, same with the WSL, right? Where now it's the WSL, was the Association of Surfing Professionals, which turned into the World Surf League. And you have all these people who aren't from surf taking this idea, hey man, everybody loves surf, right? Like I think surfing is one of those cultural touch points that people you never have had to have even seen the ocean to understand surfing from the amount of times it's in. I mean, I was at Legoland the other day floating down the lazy river, and it was 40 minutes of Beach Boys tracks and Jan and Dean or whatever, where I mean there was a I was thinking as I was floating, there was a time in American history where the most popular songs in the radio were about surfing, and not just like, you know, having the word surfing in it, but like whole songs about let's pack up the board and go surfing. I mean, and let's ride the wild surf.
The surf guitar was like, precisely, you know, the soundtrack for America for a while.
Totally. Which is, so surfing is embedded in American culture in a way where I think people come in from the outside and they believe, okay, we have this great untapped resource. The only reason it's suffering or failing or, you know, nosediving is because we haven't applied good market principles to it. Right. And so they'll always ignore, and I mean, that's the thing. We talked about it, I think, on the Kook Show. The core of surfing, like the core audience of surfing, I can't imagine that it's more than like 200,000 people worldwide.
Right.
Of people who actually give a shit. And
it's the same 200 people that follow all those Instagram accounts, all those brands.
And let's just be wild and say there's a million core surfers worldwide. Well, I think, you know, you have the brands, obviously, they think we can't have a brand based on a million people. And the WSL thinks we can't have any growth. If this is the cap of our market is a million people, then there's just no, that's not enough. And so they think, okay, but surfing, Americans understand it. And so let's go out and get, you know, non-endemic eyeballs or non-endemic people. And it's just never, ever going to work. And what ends up happening is not only do they not ever capture somebody who doesn't surf, they also lose the core surfers who now, I mean, I don't know when the last surfer, you know, guy who's core surfer who's not sponsored that I saw who was wearing anything from a surf brand, right?
Right.
Which theoretically they should. Theoretically, the surf brand should make clothes that they want to wear because it fits not only, you know, not that they want to necessarily brand as a surfer, but it's like for surfing or whatever, right? Or you're going to support the brand that you know, I don't know, make stuff for your lifestyle, whatever. The fact that surfers don't wear surf clothes and non-surfers aren't wearing surf clothes either, but it feels like they never learn their lesson. They're always chasing this person who doesn't surf as their target market, ignoring the core, while the core continues to shrink and the other person never comes on.
Yeah, because, I mean, like we were talking about, the peak, back in the day, it was like, okay, all these surf companies can sell board shorts to kids in Cincinnati, Ohio, who are just going, you know, to the lake for the weekend or to the pool. And it was like, oh, it's cool because – and now with the internet, Instagram, whatever, the brands – there's a million different brands that say, hey, we make cool shorts and this is what our vibe is. And I feel like what surfing has lost, to go back to the book, is the sort of rock star feel.
Completely.
The sort of the up all night, we're badasses, we do shit that you'll never be able to do. And you, when you wear this, you're cooler.
Which is, and I feel like I really mourn that in the book, and I do mourn that every day, right? Like, I mean, I talk about Gotcha, which if people are old enough to remember Gotcha, I remember when Gotcha came out and it just like dripped sex, right? Like every part of the brand was, it was dirty. And it was like, I mean, I remember my mom seeing a Gotcha ad and thinking, you will never, you know, touch that. Like that is a bad product. Where, and you know, as a kid, that's all I wanted then. Where
right.
All that is gone. It's now this, you know, mainstream whitewash thing where any kind of hint of trouble, which, you know, and I talked about it in Welcome to Paradise and also in this book, the conservative and, you know, this book even more, it's the death of surfing is not going to be the fact that it, you know, cocaine isn't going to kill surfing. Lack of cocaine will kill it. I mean,
right.
It's the conservative, the arch conservative kind of, we can't say anything. We just have to be, you know, serious athletes. And that's the image we're going to put out is completely asinine. It's not true. And who wants to be a part of that? If I was, you know, a jockey kid looking to do jockey stuff, I would, you know, way rather watch basketball or football or baseball or do something jockey.
Right.
Like surfing is not jockey. And this continual push to make it this jock sport, even calling it a sport, right? Like World Surf League always loves to, it's not a sport.
Yeah.
It's, whatever it is, it's not a sport. It's a dance. It's a, you know, expression. It's, you know, it's something really, really goofy. I don't know what to call it. But it's not a sport.
And it seems like that is the backlash that even when we're talking about the core people, the million yeah. people that care about it, the issue is always the judges are bullshit,
yeah.
the contest is bullshit, it's whatever. It's like the attempt to be, you know, figure skating or whatever it is, like no one watches figure skating either. So why are we pretending? And I think, you know, obviously the World Surf League doesn't want to say, hey, everybody do a bunch of cocaine
yeah.
and then go surfing. That's not their brand. And I understand that there is a market for, okay, it's outdoors, it's healthy, let's do healthy drinks, let's sell perps and let's sell like organic surfboards that aren't made in factories anymore. But the bottom line is when we talk about, and especially in your book, when you reference guys like Andy Irons,
sure,
who the whole idea that how long was that covered up for? And honestly, even now,
forever.
You talk to people and they go, oh, he had this crazy disease that he got. It's like,
sure. And it's still not. I mean, his movie, the Kissed by God film just came out, the Andy Irons documentary, which is great, right? Like, and it touches like Bruce is on Bruce Irons, Andy's brother, his honesty in the film, you know, like it's a pretty honest movie, but it still glosses over, you know, a lot of what it was. And I think also, you know, Andy died, well, I can't even remember now, probably 10 years ago or
yeah.
something. But I remember I saw the description of the film the first time that it had been mentioned before it was out. And it was the first line in the pitch was the story of, it's like a story of opioid addiction and bipolar disorder, right? Which those are two very today problems.
Yeah.
And not that Andy wasn't bipolar and didn't have an opioid addiction or whatever, but to look back and apply, you know, at least definitions that we use today, those definitely, you know, bipolar
yeah.
disorder was like, I don't remember hearing it back then. And definitely opioid addiction was not a thing. And as it's considered now, right? So it seemed like a real kind of cheap shot to go back into, oh, let's make these modern problems that people know are problems and are, you know, really intractable and difficult to deal with. And let's go and call that Andy Irons, where, you know, what if he wasn't? What if he just partied too much, right?
Exactly.
What's the difference between...
Which is an always problem.
Sure, exactly. Right? Exactly. A perpetual problem. But it's a lot easier to go say, I think that he had a disease, or, you know, and not just with Andy, anybody, to go back and say they have a disease as opposed to, yeah, maybe it's a disease, but what if his disease was he just liked to rage?
Like, right.
And then he fried his brain, so he was acted bipolar. I mean, you know, I'm no doctor or psychologist or physiologist or anything. I have no idea, but it just seems really tidy to go back. And also, and I talk about in the book too, the autopsy report, I remember when that was released for Andy, said he died of a heart attack, right? And of course, that's, you know, you don't die of drug overdose. Yeah. You die of something related to the drug overdose. But everybody's like,
your heart has to stop eventually. Yeah. That's the
thing. And then you got to have a heart attack, right? And so everybody, see, he had an undiagnosed heart problem. Like, bullshit. He's a 32-year-old man who, you know,
a world-class quote-unquote athlete.
And I don't doubt that he had hardening of the arteries. But how much cocaine do you have to do before your arteries harden? Where, I mean, it just seems like nobody ever wanted just to say, I mean, you know, he had a major, massive drug problem. Or drug, maybe it wasn't a problem. Maybe he just had an affair with drugs and it killed him at the end. I mean, that's what drugs do.
How much of just Andy's story do you think affected the surf culture with drugs and with partying?
Zero. I think that the surf culture refused to look at it, and refused to look at it honestly, for sure. Like, everybody felt, I think, okay, he was an adult. People did not feel culpable for however they maybe should have or could have felt culpable in helping him, you know, or you just partying with him and or whatever. And then also the fact that the autopsy came out and gave everybody kind of plausible deniability of, oh yeah, it wasn't the drugs, it was this. So the surf culture writ large did not deal with it 1 second like it does best. It just stuck its head in the sand on it.
Because in other, you know, there's been other sports where, you know, we had Len Bias.
Sure.
And he died. And that was sort of in the 80s going into 90s of NBA. And it did. It changed culture. People go, you can't be running around 40 minutes a night playing basketball and be all cooked up and think your heart can handle it.
Your heart will stop.
But the surf industry now, and again, it goes back to, like, their heads in the sand about every aspect of it. Because not only are they pretending it's not happening, they're almost pretending it's not happening to the detriment of their brand.
Completely. I mean, that's the thing. If and I've always thought, I mean, I sound like a broken record, but I think I write about this too.
Well, that's the point, right? Yeah, I mean, like, just keep saying you talk about it in the book. It's Cocaine and Surfing. It's available on Amazon and in your local bookstore that is not a real thing anymore. But if there was bookstores, it'd be there.
It's there, theoretically. I remember Stab magazine out of Australia, and I was going to guest edit an issue, right? And my idea for the cover, I was like totally set. I wanted to get a well-known at the time, still well-known pro surfer for the cover, face down in a giant bowl of Coke with like a thumbs up or whatever, right? It was like a funny, like, nod and a wink, knowing that this is all what we do. And that got such blowback from the publisher and owner. And I was like, oh, okay, well, what if I stick a swastika on the cover? And that got the okay. So I was able to stick a swastika on the cover instead of a surfer face down in a bowl of Coke, which to me, that crystallizes the way surfing is. Like, it's so dumb about other political stuff or religious. You could put anything,
right,
as long as it's not that thing. And then, you know, they'll be kind of cool, but not cool because they're cool with it, just out of ignorance. It's this to their detriment, where I think if a brand, you know, doesn't have to say, we don't have to be the brand of let's do Coke and go surfing, but just at least acknowledging or being honest about what surfers are and who surfers are and how surfers act and all this kind of stuff. That's part of the problem with the surfing industry, I think, is just none of it's honest, and it smells and feels so dishonest that I think it even repels people who would have a general affinity for the brand. And I think there's some smaller brands doing it really well now, like, you know, brands like Salty Crew, which I think are, you know, these pocket brands, but are super successful because, you know, Salty Crew is not about partying or anything, but it's just about fishing and surfing. And they're just honest, right, about what it is. And people, it's appealing because it's an honest, people like to surf and fish, then attach to the brand, where there's, you know, there are success stories, I think, at surf, but they're just really, really small ones and not the surf industry, because you have the Billabongs and Quicksilvers, which are now the same company.
Right.
Perpetually trying to chase this larger market that they sniffed back in, you know, whenever they went public and were valued at $2 billion. And it's just been shit since. I mean, the fact that they're one company now, they should recognize, wait, this is, we're failing and we're going to keep failing until there's one person in the office.
Yeah. And, you know, like you said, it's not necessarily, I don't think, the approach of saying, hey, we want to glorify drugs and the party lifestyle. But you look at the coolest people in surfing, it's a lot of times people have gone like, I don't want to be a part of the pro surfing world. Yep. Like Jamie, like Rob, like guys who are going like, man, contests are bullshit. And like, I just want to do my thing. And it almost seems like the idea that the coolest people in surfing don't want to be associated with what is supposed to be surfing. It just makes it seem like, hey, just be a little bit more honest about everything. Just don't put it under the cover of, oh, this is popcorn, and we're gonna, you know, one day you'll be able to watch the Pipe Masters on ABC, and it'll be live.
Nobody wants that. No, I mean, I don't want that.
Yeah,
and I am a surf fan. I don't want to see it on ABC live.
It seems like with the move to the modernization of everything, you can watch everything streaming, and you can watch all the contests as they run. It seems like it'd be so easy for them to say, hey, I mean, I get an alert. I get an email every time the contest starts. Every day. It's like, it's on.
Sure.
And to me, again, we talk about sort of the peak. I remember a time where I was like, oh, shit, I better put it on so I can talk about it. And now I'm just like, I'll see the highlights on Instagram.
Yeah.
If somebody threw a big air,
you'll know about it. Yeah.
And otherwise. Now, how about that in the technology? It seems like when you go on Instagram and you go on, you know, whatever, all the apps that have everything that you can see, it just seems like it's everybody showing you the same thing all the time.
I mean, that's what I feel. It feels just like wallpaper to me now. I mean, it takes kind of a lot to get me to stop and pay attention. I mean, even the tour this year, right? Like, and maybe I'm just in a weird space or something, but like, I haven't been interested in anything, any part of it. Like, it feels like there's no storyline there. There's no hook. There's no reason to watch, right? Like, yeah, John's hurt. Kelly's done. You know, the Brazilians are smoking it, and that's awesome. Like, Felipe Toledo and everything are doing incredible things, but I don't need to watch his incredible thing live. Like, I'm just as happy to see, oh, yeah, like you said, there. I saw his sick air on Instagram. Isn't that great? I don't know. Again, I mean, I think that there's just no storylines in it to me. There's no compelling reason to cheer for or against any surfer on tour. It's just wallpaper. Like, they're all the same.
We go back just a few years when it was like, okay, you have a Mick Kelly pipe final. And like, obviously you in your first book wrote about your interaction with Mick that we talked about at length on our Kooks of Comedy episode. But it almost, and I know there are people who love Mick, and by the way, I've gotten hate for sort of not loving Mick. I haven't said a bad word about him, but it's like, just for not loving him. Yep. People come out and go like, how dare you?
Yeah.
But there was a time where it was almost like he's kind of, you have this, you know, head to head, even if it's just Kelly's American and Mick's Australian, and you're sort of taking sides.
For sure. And to me, surfing is custom made for that kind of thing. I mean, surfing also, except for being able to throw it real easy, but I mean, I think you could even do side bets on who's going to throw it.
Yeah.
But I think there's so much betting opportunity in surfing, and there's so many storylines that theoretically could be, you know, pushed out, and just the World Surf League for whatever reason is not. And so now, yeah. And you have these bunch of people now who have come up, you know, the kids on tour now have grown up with this as their model. So you surf conservatively. You surf 75% because you don't want to blow it and fall. So you surf lamer than you would otherwise. You don't say anything interesting because they're not interesting anymore. They're just contest kids, half of them. Or more than half of them. And, you know, you had guys like Mick and Kelly. There was a contest structure, but it wasn't the same as now. Like, they were individuals who then got onto tour, right? And so there's still, so Mick's personality was very clearly what it was, you know, and I mean, for a minute, the hard partying Australian, you know, Kelly is kind of the clean American. Then you had Andy, who was like, you know, dark rock star, whatever.
It's like a boy band. So you're I'm into the bad boy
for sure. You know, exactly. And you could pick. And now I don't know who you can pick anymore to be like, if you want to root for an archetype, I don't know. That doesn't exist. Right. Like, I guess you can cheer progression, but cheering progression is not fun. People want, I think, especially in man on man sports, like, you know, UFC does a brilliant job of, I don't follow UFC at all, but I probably know, you know, 10 UFC fighters purely from going on ESPN and scrolling through headlines, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like even from that, I know kind of their personality, who their base is, things like that, right? Where surfing just does not have, full stop, doesn't have that.
Yeah, and even like you talk about UFC, it's like, I know people just from their shit talking.
Yeah.
Like, I know Conor McGregor is going to go out there and talk a bunch of shit. Is he good? I don't know. I know nothing about UFC. But what, you know, in the surf world, obviously these guys are all traveling together, all touring together, they're all partying together. What aspect of it, and it seems like a guy like you would be, you know, and writers like you would be the ones to say, hey, come with us. We're going to pay for you to come out here and follow us around and give the sort of human, the party side, like the what's going on behind the scenes that will make people interested. Oh, I didn't know that guy was like this.
Yeah. You'd think that would be real successful. And you think also that even the, you know, commentating during the contest, that the commentators would let people in, you know, because the commentators
are
all
out
there
with them.
Yeah. They're all partying all night with these guys. Right. And so you'd think at some point they would say, okay, you know, have enough kind of constraint, but also know that you can throw, okay, you know, last night I was out with Jordy Smith and he was hammered singing on the table, right?
Yeah.
And now look at him out there. It would be an amazing little, I think, like tidbit of, you know, whatever. And part of the problem is, I think, is now it's, I mean, the WSL has tried so hard to make it a sport where I think the surfers aren't necessarily out partying anymore,
right,
during contests. They're like doing push-ups and sit-ups and going to sleep early, and the who knows what the hell the commentators are doing, but it's all just boring. It's boring as hell.
It seems like I've seen more surfers in, you know, tubs filled with ice,
yeah,
and a story about a long Instagram story about like the best way to recover,
sure,
than I do about like guys. And it's just like, I don't,
who cares?
Yeah,
I mean, if you want recovery stories, then there's way better places to get those,
right?
Like you can go on to CrossFit's blog.
Yeah. So as a, you know, a surf journalist, and I know it seems like every time I read your stuff, it's always like, I want out,
yeah,
but I can't get out.
Yeah.
And it keeps pulling you back in.
I'm stuck.
But what, like, where does that, how does it make you feel where you're like, okay, this is sort of all dying and sort of all going in a way that I don't want to go. Now, you do have the beauty of being the guy who's like, here's why it's all shitty. And here's, you know, read me if you think it's shitty. But where does that leave
cool.
you as a sort of a writer where you're like, this is my beat.
Yeah.
And it's not going anywhere.
So I really thought that Welcome to Paradise was going to be my out. I mean, I genuinely believed that was going to be the, you know, my, and I write about it here, that was my bridge burning book, right?
Right.
Where this was it. And then when that didn't happen, like I really tried, like I tried to do to go cover the fashion of war. Like, so I tried to get back into war,
yeah,
and I went to Ukraine during the whole Russia dust up, and I thought the stories were funny, but they just had no engagement. And it was just like, I tried a bunch of things that I didn't have engagement. And you realize at some point in your life, you are what you are, right? Like, this is your sandbox, and you could try to go to another sandbox, but nobody will know you in that sandbox. It's like, you may not even get in.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I feel, which again, I have a midlife crisis, in this book. But yeah, I don't know what to do. Like, I have the next book that I want to write in my mind, which is not a surf book. And so that's, I guess, what it's going to be. It's just going to be. But like, all to say, though, I thought I'm always going to be in surf. Like, I will always be a surf journalist. So whatever I write, wherever I go, this is home. And this is where I'll continue to produce. Just because I think somebody, I thought that there was nothing to say about it after Welcome to Paradise. But now I know there's an infinite amount to say. And it's as long as surfing is going down the shitty conservative path, there's got to be somebody there making fun of it.
Yeah.
And I will be that, happily be that person.
Yeah. So we've got Cocaine and Surfing. That's obviously out right now and everybody should get it and buy it and read it. And then we've got a Twitter book
is being written right now. I need to write another one after this.
And then what, you know, what story in surfing, like if you could say, hey, I want to be able to write about this and like give me access to it, what is the story or the person or the thing in surfing that you think, hey, why isn't anybody talking about this? I feel like people are talking about all the wrong stuff.
Yeah, that's a great question.
You're like, if I knew, I'd write it.
I think a really honest story about Jerry Lopez would be fascinating. I think Jerry's done a really good job of whitewashing who he is. And so I think a genuinely honest, if Jerry would, even if he didn't allow it, as somebody who would really go deep on Lopez, would be a fascinating book, because that man is filled with, you know, like on the outside, he's the Zen guru.
Right.
On the inside, I think there's a lot more happening, and, you know, what he's done to people and, you know, both good and bad would be a fascinating story, I think. A real honest, which I don't think will ever happen, but
right,
that's the one I would love to see and write. And also, I would also love to go back to the well with Eddie Rothman. I love Eddie Rothman as a character, and I would love to do, you know, a fuller portrait of Eddie.
It says on the jacket of the book that Welcome to Paradise, Now Go to Hell, that you've got options for it. Like, are you turning it into something else? Have you tried to?
It got optioned when it came out, and it continues to get optioned.
The regular Hollywood.
Exactly. Every year.
You're happy to take the money and tell me when something's happening?
Every year, I think, I'm going to take it back and actually try to do something.
Yeah.
Every year, the option renews. Like, it's a mutual whatever option, and I never have, when the money's there, I always, oh yeah, I need the money now. So every year I renew it. And who knows, maybe this will be the last year and either they stop renewing it or I finally grab it back. But yeah, I would love, I don't think it's the book itself is a movie, but there's something about that world that's sure. Certainly a movie, and it would be fun to do something. But again, I don't know if, yeah, it's stuck in Hollywood.
What I like about cocaine and surfing, and you talking about sort of this Jerry Lopez idea, and that I think would be, you'd be great for it, is there is, you do go back, it's a lot of history. You go, I mean, we're going back as far as, you know, early Peru, where you're sort of linking cocaine and surfing from the very beginning. And I love that. I love that aspect where you're like, I'm going to draw these loose lines and but I'm going to sell you on it. Like, it's the feeling I get the whole time is like, I'm going to make you buy what I'm trying to sell myself.
And Matt Warshaw is such a genius. I mean, Matt Warshaw is a writer. He wrote the Encyclopedia of Surfing and the History of Surfing, both huge books, which are well-written, beautifully done. Without him, of course, you know, I'm just stealing from him for all this stuff. And he's kind enough to not only let me steal it, but then also write the introduction for the book, which is the best part of the book. Surf history is such a fun, you know, it's just this garden where people don't play except for Matt. And so to be able to go in there and pull all this stuff is pretty fun.
And when you talk to Matt, Matt's up in Seattle now.
He is.
And he's sort of just like, when he did the Encyclopedia of Surfing on the internet, I remember it dropping and being like, holy shit, like, it's the Wikipedia for surfing. And I loved the idea of it. We sponsored the page for Kook.
Yeah, perfect.
For a while with Kooks of Comedy. And it's like, okay, this is everything you need to know. And he's just sort of, he's in a place, like you say, no surf. He's just creating this whole kind of the history of surf.
Totally.
And, you know, you use that a lot in a great tale, and early in the book, as you go and you sit down with him and you're like, hey, this is my theory, and he kind of like shoots you down. But when you go look back and you take it through that, you know, super like where is actually the first person to slide on waves, and then obviously, you know, the Hawaiians is like they're the famed, okay, this is where everybody discovered it, and then you have Malibu and the surfing in American culture. What is sort of the recent history or the today of surfing, like, is that even a part of the history of surfing? Is there like a in the surf encyclopedia, like, what is today's story?
I think for me it's just the grand surf apocalypse, right, where this whole thing was built from, you know, really when the baby boomers latched onto it as a way to rebel kind of against you know, what was happening, you know, post-war, basically, with everybody, okay, the dream is to go get a suburban home, white picket fence, family, go to work, da-da-da-da-da, where you had, you know, a core of society rebelling against that, and those were the surfers, right? And they found this thing that was not only pointless, it doesn't make you any money, it's a waste of time, it's, you know, doesn't lead to success or anything on down the line. You know, so that was the start. It hit this point where all of a sudden, oh, wait, we can make money from this, right, in the 80s and the 90s. And so what I see today, though, is like just this straight up apocalypse taking hold, and we'll get back hopefully to nobody's going to make any money from this thing. There's the people who choose to do it are a bunch of derelict kids at the beach, and, you know, and then maybe we can start again and go into the cycle of, oh, wait, no, we can make money and start again. But that's, to me, that's today, is this is Armageddon of surf. We're living honestly in Armageddon.
Yeah, because it almost seems like there's this moment in surf history 15, 20 years ago where, like you said, nobody, you don't do it, like, how dare you bring a surfboard into my house, and you must be hanging out with all the kids who do drugs.
Sure.
And then right after that, it's like, oh, no, surfing's a career.
Yeah.
And then right after that, it's like dads on the beach filming their kids, trying to get them.
Totally.
And that, in essence, sort of ruined it.
Totally.
Like, no one wants – it's like when your mom joined Facebook.
Totally. I mean, that's
that was the end of Facebook.
And that's exactly it. And I want the kid who was coached by his dad, totally burned out, his kid bringing a surfboard home, and that dad just stomping on it, right? Just yeah. breaking it. And having kid have to go out and like find a sneaky surfboard somewhere and do it again because he loves it, not because he thinks he's going to get some stinking career out of it. I mean, that's a crazy thing to me. And I'll get criticized sometimes for it, but like people will ask me time to time, how do I make a career, you know, writing in surf? I'm like, don't, not because it's like you can't, but like write surf or do surf or any part of it because you love it and make your money somewhere else. And if those things ever can dovetail, then that's awesome, right? Like, great, don't turn it down. But don't try to get in looking to make money off this thing, because this thing is, I mean, not that I'm a purist with surfing, but it's just, it's a laugh. And the fact that anybody's ever made one penny off surfing is a total laugh. Nobody should have ever,
right?
And not that they shouldn't have because they didn't deserve it, but just, it's not something that money should be made off of. It's just goofy.
Yeah, it like, you know, we've talked about the whole time. It's almost seems contrary to the whole idea, and therefore, you
totally.
Know.
It's absurd.
I mean, you know, we had you on the Kooks of Comedy, and the idea is like, let's talk surfing, and let's talk comedy, and let's be funny. And it's like the surf industry does not care at all,
no.
because they're like, it's not funny.
No, we it's don't, deadly
and
serious.
And I'm like, guys, no, it's super funny.
Yep.
You don't understand. It's you're all kooks.
Yeah.
Now, in the book, early in the book, I think it's even in the introduction, you talk about being at Kelly Slater's surf ranch.
Yes.
Now there's the ability to create a wave that barrels, and we can hold surf contests, and it's in the Olympics. And I don't know if the plan, do you know, is the plan to like hold these Olympic games in a wave pool?
For sure. Like, I think they're rolling it out real slowly, right? So initially they're like, no, it's going to be in Chiba or wherever it is. And, you know, it's going to be in the ocean. But I think they'd have to get real lucky to get a typhoon, basically, to have any waves at all.
Right.
And so then, of course, it just was announced a couple weeks ago. I think, oh, no, you know, we are building a surf ranch there, and maybe it'll be this. For sure it's going to be at the stinking a surf, you know, surf ranch or whatever they're going to call it, facility in Japan.
What, having gone up to the surf ranch, what, like, how do you feel just about the idea of a surf ranch in general and the wave pool? And
it's fine. Like, the what I realized having done it, I surfed. I blew my shoulder. I haven't surfed since. It was the last wave I've surfed in November. So I blew my shoulder out so badly that I had to have major surgery.
Is it safe to say you've done cocaine more recently than you surf?
Oh, yeah, for sure. yes, that's why cocaine leads. It's cocaine right. and surfing. It's not surfing and cocaine.
Such a better title, honestly.
Way better. But yeah, it made me realize the kind of first wave, it's that surfing and surfing are two separate things. That the physical part of surfing, the riding a wave, is one part. But then what makes surfing so great is all the weird intangible stuff. That's the smell of wax, you know, salt water in the air, the sand in your feet, like all this stuff. Sure, riding a wave is great, but also surfing is not just riding waves. Surfing is more than just riding a wave, which I think what they did, what it felt like to me, is they genetically modified surfing. And I don't know what the consequences of that are going to be, but it definitely is not as fun. I will say that. Like, it's fun to ride Kelly's wave, but it's not like I would take shitty beach, my, you know, shitty local beach break almost every day of the week over a couple waves at Kelly's.
Like you said, you know, surfing is almost like a state of mind,
yeah.
an attitude. The beauty of the whole experience is being out there and going, is one coming?
Yeah.
It was the last wave that came in, the last wave that'll ever come in. Was so there's some sort of natural disaster I don't know about?
Which is the, like, sitting at Kelly's, it's the worst feeling ever. So, you know, like, you kind of go in order. So you sit along a chain link fence in the mm-hmm. middle of the pool, and the first person up here is in priority, right? And so when it's your turn, you know, a loudspeaker voice will come on. 1 minute till wave. You have 1 minute to sit there and think, don't blow this wave, don't blow this wave, don't blow this wave. Like, out in the ocean, you're just reacting to what the ocean's doing, right? At Kelly's pool, like, sitting there knowing you have 1 minute until your wave comes in is so rattling, and everybody's rattled. Like, everybody in the guys I was with, it was surf journalist day, so it was all surf journalists.
Right.
And nobody, I don't think anybody kooked the takeoff. But everybody was so like, you could just see the stress. And the funnest waves at Kelly's are the ones, because you can catch other people's scraps, right? If somebody falls off, you can hop on if you're in position or whatever. And those are fun because, well, those are the funnest waves I had there because you're not thinking. You're just like, oh, I'm going to paddle for this one. But the, yeah, I mean, the fact that it counts you down. Yeah, that's not the fun part about surfing. The fun part about surfing is, or a fun part about surfing is a surprise. And there's no surprise at Kelly's.
And almost the same way that surfing has this sort of whitewashing now that everybody wants to be, wants to be cool, but it wants to be like healthy and it wants to be, you know, environmentally friendly. I have seen a million videos from the surf ranch. The only person in the history of Instagram and the internet that made a story about just like, I kooked it like a bunch of times, was he had Drew Brees there.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, this is real. Like, he's an athlete. He's obviously not a surfer, but he played in San Diego for a while, and this is something he likes to do. And he's like, it's hard.
Yeah.
I fucked it up. Yeah. I kooked it. And I feel like that was he's not the only person that fell on the wave.
Sure.
You know?
No.
But this idea that everybody goes, everybody gets barreled.
Everybody has a perfect the ride of their life.
Yeah.
Totally. It's such a lie. It's funny. The being there, I can't speak for everyone, but I will speak for most people, left utterly depressed.
Like, really?
Where it really depresses you because you feel not only are you put up, you know, it's this theoretically perfect wave. So it's just the only thing blowing it is you, right? Like out in the ocean, you can say, oh, you know, that section didn't hold up or whatever, that guy dropped in or whatever. Like Kelly's is you're solely responsible for your sucking, which is like a heavy burden, A. And B, it's just, there's just something about removing surprise and removing all this. Like, yeah, the people there who thought they were going to love it, I think he came away just morbidly depressed, like questioning their lives' choices.
The sort of doomsday idea that everybody has is soon every town will have one of these and everybody will be able to learn to surf. And then everybody will come driving to the beach and want to be a surfer.
I think they're two totally separate things, oddly. The I didn't see him surf it, but apparently the kid who rips Kelly's wave the hardest is an old wakeboard kid who has never seen the ocean his entire life. Like, doesn't know, and that was the first time he's ever on a surfboard, but he just rips it because that's how it feels more like wake surfing. The way the wave is generated feels more like wake surfing than an actual wave. And it's got a ton of power and stuff, but yeah, so I think you're going to have, if it takes off at all, and Kelly's model to me is untenable anyway. I don't see a way you could generate enough waves to make money in that thing, unless you're charging like everybody $1,000 to go sit in there.
That's what I heard. I know somebody that's they run a surf school in Costa Rica.
Yeah,
they're taking the school. They're paying $50,000 or whatever, and then. And once everybody goes, like the instructors get a wave.
Yeah, sure. And that's the thing. Like waves are such a premium there. I mean, you know, it's funny. Everybody, like for Surf Journalism Day, everybody was at the end counting down like how many waves they had. That's like the, you know, they're a commodity there because the way the wave works, like there's a new wave pool in Waco, which is a whole different system, which actually brings waves and sets.
Mm-hmm.
And so you go out and surf, you know, 20 waves in your session, I think, in Waco. Kelly's, I think you're really lucky. If there's four guys in the water, you'll be really, really, really lucky to get six waves. Like the luckiest ever. And then most people had four waves.
So this North Shore dream of kid learns to surf and then wins pipeline.
I don't think so. I think I would be surprised if a kid ever came out of the wave pool and was able to do anything in the ocean. The ocean is such a weird canvas. I mean, what happens in the ocean? That's the thing. Like great surfers like the John Johns and Kellys of the world, it's not just their physical skill. It's how they read the waves. Like Kelly can sit out a pipe and know from a swell line, you know, half a mile out to sea, however far he can see out, he can see the bump and know, oh, that one's going to break on the way it's barely, you know, angled, that one's going to break on this part of the reef and this is where I want to sit, where that kind of stuff is either preternatural or comes from hundreds and hundreds and
living
hundreds of
in
hours.
The water.
Exactly.
So to get away from surf for a second, you do mention in the book, and I have to ask you about it because in addition to not maybe liking Mick all that much, the thing I take heed for is every time I shit on Drake.
Oh, yeah.
You said repeatedly you hate Drake.
I hate Drake.
What is it about Drake that you hate?
I mean, I think the it's funny because every once in a while, my stepdaughter, she's 16, will get me on a, she'll put a Drake song on and I'll be like, oh, who's this? She's like, Drake, ha ha ha. And it'll really get me. So it's not that I don't like his music necessarily. I think that maybe I dislike Drake for the same reason that I'm angry at surfing is Drake, I think, and I'm not a fan enough to know, but it feels to me like he postures like he's kind of a gangster or at least kind of a tough guy or at least somewhere in the periphery of, you know, whatever that is. Where, but is, didn't he go to Juilliard? Like, isn't he a Jewish kid who went to Juilliard?
And was on a Disney show.
Yeah,
and,
totally.
Yeah, exactly.
So how much better would Drake, and I think I would like Drake probably, if Drake set himself up as, hey, I'm this total kook outsider. I loved rap so much as a kid that now I'm going to try to be a rapper, but I'm a full-on kook, right?
Right.
But instead of trying to position like, I belong, you know, I'm Drake, I'm the big guy, I'm the big dog, you know, look at me. Like all his...
Instead of like manufactured beefs
totally.
That never end in, like back in the day, a rap beef was ended in murder.
Totally, exactly, you know?
And
exactly.
And now they end in like mixtapes.
Yeah, exactly. And so if Drake, I feel that I don't like dislike Drake's music, I dislike Drake's persona, and I dislike that Drake is just feels artificial and unnecessarily so because he could easily position himself as... You know, I mean, just think how many rappers are on now, like, you know, Childish Gambino or even, who just won the Pulitzer? Why am I forgetting his name? Kendrick. Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Where Kendrick has a unique position in the space, right? Drake seems like he just came in and occupied the archetype. Like, okay, oh, wait, this is what rapper is. Rapper's about benzos and da-da-da-da-da and da-da-da-da and gold chains and buying basketball teams. And he just came and fit into this slot of what the rapper was supposed to be. And the guy who went and stinking won the Pulitzer was a guy who you know, broke that mold. I mean, Kendrick Lamar is not, even though he's from Compton and all that, doesn't fit into the traditional role.
Right.
So, and even, you know, whatever, Glover, whatever his name is,
Childish
Gambino guy. Like, where they're creating this more interesting persona. Why didn't Drake do that? Why did Drake just be, like, a...
Doesn't have a real personality,
yeah.
So did all the things that, like you, were, like we're saying with surfing, the
and
whole
that's
time
it. Maybe Drake is a modern professional surfer.
Yeah. Now, you know, I think that this ties right back into the issue that we're talking about with surfing, which is nowadays we said like, oh, surf guitar and punk rock and all that. When I think of surfing now, and I think a lot of people do, it's like Jack Johnson and like, you know, energy drinks or organic energy drinks. And by the way, I like Jack Johnson.
Sure.
It's great. It's great. You
totally.
Know, like
for what it is, it's fine.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it just seems like there's no link to what are these guys even about?
Yeah, no, there. I mean, that's what I think that again, you know, driving up on the 405, I saw the giant billboard there for Kelly now. And I didn't know I get to go write about it as the spokesman for organic Michelob Ultra.
Right.
Where I think people see it, and even, you know, to a lesser extent, but the Corona and the, what's the other Mexican beer that does whatever?
Pacifico,
and, exactly. Yeah. Where they have this surf theme. It's always about, you know, kind of
life
a healthy,
at the beach
life at the beach. You know, they're never like raging. They're like making a sunset barbecue, right?
Right.
With healthy girls and healthy guys doing a healthy thing and enjoying something, you know, responsibly, like, which, surfing is the most irresponsible thing you can do. I mean, not more than anything, but I think surfing is utterly worthless as a thing. It's a waste of time. It's a waste of money.
I argue with my girlfriend about surfing more than probably anything but Instagram.
And
Instagram and surfing is the death of my relationship.
And she's right, too, for sure. Like, there's nothing honorable about it. I think you can argue if you really want to get in the weeds, like, oh, man, but I'm healthy. I'm in the water. What, you're burning, like, 4 calories or something.
Yeah.
Like, you're doing this motion a little bit. Like, there's
a lot of fat guys out there surfing.
Tons of fat guys. It's not a good workout. It's not necessarily good for you. I mean, there's so many old surfers I know who can't do it anymore because their backs and necks are all fucked up from laying on the board, you know, arched in this weird, like, on down the line. Surfboards themselves are toxic. I mean, there's nothing more toxic than a surfboard, even the ones that are kind of green or whatever. They're toxic. So it's like, but everybody think, oh, but they're outside, so let's just make it this healthy lifestyle thing. It's not healthy. It's not good for you. It's horribly bad for you, just like cocaine. So let's just
say, come back.
So let's just all admit that's what it is and stop pretending. Like, how much would you love? I was rocked up and saw fucking Kelly as the, and Kelly wouldn't be the right one, but whatever. Kelly as the spokesperson for Jägermeister, just smashing shots, like drunk with the blood in his face, and just I surf. I would say yes, thank you. Like, and you don't have to be a full rock star rager. Like, you know, but I mean,
and the same thing goes with like Monster Energy, Red Bull. Like this thing, don't drink too many of those, kids. It's like poison. It's really, really bad for you.
Honest to goodness, poison. They are shilling poison, and that's who, you know, for our healthy surf lifestyle, that's who the sponsors or some big sponsors are.
It, you know, the book is Cocaine and Surfing, but in a way, it's like all these things we're talking about and surfing. It's this undercurrent that no one will talk about that is behind surfing, but that isn't being embraced. And
surfing is a bad thing for bad people. That's like, honestly, and we're anybody who surfs, there's a problem with every single person who surfs. There's damage in them.
So you haven't surfed since
November,
since you were at the pool. Like you,
that was my last
wave. The surf ranch killed your surf game.
It totally did. I think I'm almost back. I went and did a swam in the ocean yesterday and did an overhand stroke just swimming for the first time since November. So I'm getting back ish.
So right now, while you're not surfing, is it pretty much the Cocaine and Surfing press tour? Is that what you're...
It's a little bit press tour. And then I'm so wound up in next book. Like, so I'm just wasting all my time in the next book.
And Beach Grit?
Beach Grit. Every day.
You're texting your articles into Beach Grit.
That's it.
You got a Michelob, Michelob piece coming now.
It's coming right up.
Now, before we wrap up, because I want... You in the book, you sort of talk about your history with the surf publications. Like, there's the moment where it's sort of the surfer wake and the surfing, you know, then surfing takes over their Instagram. And you've written for all the magazines. You were involved with Stab, but now it's Beach Grit. And Beach Grit, you know, I want everybody to go to Beach Grit because it's great, because it is. This sort of, you guys are pushing buttons. And what I love about it, and we talked about this on Kooks, is I would say for people in the that know surfing at all, you're almost the anti-inertia.
Yeah.
Right? Like there's two sides.
Yeah.
And I love that, because I think that is the most kooky experience
goodness.
On the internet.
It's amazing.
When I wrote a piece when they first started, I was like, oh, great, they're taking sort of things. It was like, oh, no, you can't say that.
Yeah.
You can't say beware of couples surfing together. I'm like, that's the most innocent thing. And Beach Grit is the opposite. You guys,
Beach Grit is beware of couples surfing together.
Yeah. So go to beachgrit.com, get the book, Cocaine and Surfing. Follow you on Twitter.
Yep, a new story, the new book.
Yeah, we'll show you how to make a thread
I'm so excited to make a thread.
Are you back on Instagram?
I am a surf journalist, but all I'm drawing is pictures of penises so far, more or less. So I still got to find my new groove. Yeah, having lost that damn account was really like, it's a gut punch.
Well, I feel like it maybe was a blessing.
Yeah,
I think you're supposed to be. And for, I know for a while it was like, and that is what's happening in Instagram. And I feel like it happens even more in surfing than anything. It's always this pushing people to each other. Like, oh, you follow this and it's really great. Like, I do something similar to that.
Yep.
And I always... love that, hey, I get my Instagram memes from Chaz.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like I was, you know, hey, this is where my guy is.
Totally.
But seeing the return of your face just on my Twitter feed, I want to tell everybody, go follow Chaz
on
Twitter.
That's where I'm excited now. Like, Instagram, I feel, honestly, I do feel like it was a blessing. I feel like, come on, I'm doing, like, fucking surf memes. Like, that is so lame.
Right.
But I was stuck doing it because, like, once you start something... on Instagram, I think in social media, people get real mad when you change the program.
Totally.
And so I'm just like, there, okay, I'll kick in another surf meme. So,
and then you throw in the pitch to, you know, the new Beach Grit, and it's like, I have all these people.
And that's the damn thing about it. It's such a good tool to throw to. And so then you're just stuck doing it. So the new one, is honestly drawing. I'm treating my Instagram like Twitter. So I'm just handwriting things in.
I know. I saw you even put up just the Twitter, like the Twitter bird.
Exactly. That's the new one.
So preview it for the people on Twitter, because I'm only a couple of tweets in, I guess, as a chapter. What's the Twitter surf book? What's the idea?
I don't know yet. I'm writing as I go. So the World Surf League, at least at the start of it, is had this thing called the Ambassador of Stoke and Leisure, where they picked some kid out of, I think he was the Midwest somewhere. He won, I think he had to submit a video or something, and he won to be the Ambassador of Stoke and Leisure was his job title. They flew him out to Hawaii, and I don't know what he thought he was going to do, but I think he had to, like, go skydiving a couple times, just do kind of nerd stuff around Hawaii, and then they flew him home and never heard him again. And so I'm wondering, I don't know if it's going to be a horror story yet. I think it might slip into horror. Like, the idea of this ambassador in Stoke and Leisure, like the World Surf League, keeping on bringing these Midwestern boys out and sending them to Hawaii. Maybe it's just like a sex slave factory in Hawaii.
Well, I've already got my next idea. Can I submit to Beach Grit to be the like ambassador of Coke and pleasure?
Yes, please.
And I'll just like, I haven't been doing a lot of Coke lately, but I'll be this guy for you.
Yes, please. Yes.
Chaz, it was awesome to have you here. Anything else you want people to check out? Just go buy Cocaine and Surfing.
If you can, it would really make me happy, people.
It's fantastic. Like I said, I'm halfway through it, but I can't wait. I can't wait to finish it. Thanks for coming in and being a part of the new pod.
Thank you so much for having me.